Stand as still as possible and raise your arms above your head. This is to provide optimal time transport and is absolutely necessary. Prepare for nanobot transfusion. Now departing.
Well, computer, where are we now?
The current year is 2051, and we are standing in the Ballston area of Arlington, Virginia. Latitude 38.8809.
I think that's specific enough. Folks, this is an exciting time in the history of Ballston, because the world has just about entirely run out of fossil fuels.
Fossil fuels are formed by natural processes such as anaerobic decomposition of buried dead organisms. The age of the organisms and their resulting fossil fuels is typically millions of years.
Yes, that's right, but now the city is being powered by a whole bunch of other power sources. And here in 2051 is when people are figuring out how to reimagine their infrastructure and how cities are put together.
Change in every area. We have a view that we call the all of the above strategy, and we actually believe that you can't take any source off the table entirely, even though any source is going to have consequences that involve environmental externality.
Hold on. Martin, can you introduce yourself?
I'm Martin Lowry, L-O-W-E-R-Y. I'm an executive vice president of the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association,
which is basically a group of people who manage their own electricity. And we just so happen to be standing right outside their headquarters. Now, Martin is not alive in 2051, but back in 2014, he was instrumental in figuring out how all these different power sources could work together.
So with nuclear, you have the issue of Fukushima and how do you make sure that nuclear safety is in place. With coal, you've got the issue of CO2 and greenhouse gas emissions. How can you mitigate that, or reduce that significantly? With natural gas, you also have CO2 emissions, and you have questions about the future of hydraulic fracturing or fracking and whether that's going to be a permanent supply of gas. With solar and wind, you've got the intermittency issue, which is when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing, what's your source of power? When the sun is shining and wind is blowing, how do you connect that power source into the grid, which is not a trivial engineering issue. With hydropower, will we see expansion of hydroelectric dams, or is that something that with endangered species issues and so on isn't going to happen? So with geothermal, how deep do you have to drill to get to those geothermal pools? Where in the country are they besides Nevada and Northern California?
Let's keep moving. There's so much more to see.
Please walk north, directly under the White Arch. Continue forward until you see a large fountain.
Most people go about their day-to-day lives wanting to get by, wanting to have, you know, creature comforts, food, water, clothing, shelter, and don't think a lot about who's controlling their lives or not.
So, as the end of the world was approaching in the 2010s and such, why did people look to co-ops to help solve their problems? Weren't you just saying that people don't want to think too much about how their light bulbs turn on?
The cooperative values are self-help, self-responsibility, democracy, equity, equality, and solidarity. Those values all relate to the idea of controlling your own life and not having others control it.
Now, you should be getting to that fountain the computer mentioned. When you do, turn right and walk east toward the park. You should see it in the distance. Take a look around. see all those buildings, all those people rushing around, working on them, the big yellow scaffolding and construction equipment. They're finally adapting urban life to be more efficient and sustainable.
They are also doing it to avoid total catastrophe. There are no choices remaining.
Well, maybe, but just look at how hard they're working to tear down an old way of doing things and to build a new one.
Cross the street to enter the park. And please look both ways for traffic.
Once you're in the park, take a look around at those machines roving around the central grassy area. Go on, walk right up to the grass.
Because I'm powered off of the crop, I'm not using fossil fuels, and I'm also don't have labor overhead, I'm not chucking it around.
This guy is one of our guests, and he created something very special.
I'm drawing it on the fly, so I don't have to cut, break, and fail.
Computer, can you give him an introduction?
Jason Force, founder of Emo Corporation and inventor of automated biopellet harvester drones.
The basic technology explanation, cut, juice it, take the water out, dry it in a rotary dryer, pelletize, convert the pellets to fuel in the fuel reactor, run that into an engine, and then into an alternator to create power.
That's right, those robot lawnmowers you see in front of you are cutting the grass and converting it into fuel pellets that can be burned in special generators to heat the buildings all around you.
So 80% of what you produce is surplus. 20% gets used as a fuel. The only thing that's left over is ash. And ash that comes from agricultural sources is actually a good fertilizer, so you actually just dump that. Everyone seems to like that. There's a bunch of common energy crops, so miscanthus is actually used as decorative grasses in many people's yards. So imagine large fields of those very tall grasses. They produce a great deal of biomass and they're fairly efficient in the way that they use the sun. But I do think probably what you will see from an energy point of view is local power generation co-ops will switch to bio-based sources. If the price changes because the source infrastructure changes, it may make sense to start having buildings that have their own generators on site.
Which means that you have to have the infrastructure in place that's going to be attractive to people. There's a lot of discussion today about a rebirth of American manufacturing and through high-tech approaches to manufacturing.
As we continue the tour, please feel free to walk around the perimeter of the grassy field. Do not enter the grassy area as it is currently being processed by automated harvesters.
In fact, it'll be running about 1.5 miles an hour. So if there's a deer or a dog or whatever, they'll get out of the way.
Yeah, you don't want to test their obstacle detection algorithms.
The easiest thing is heating. You can basically retrofit large buildings. If they have a boiler room that feeds natural gas or fuel oil, retrofitting pellet-based renewable sources is fairly easy.
We are still very bullish on ground source heat pumps. And what those are heat pumps that take the exchange of heat and cooling out of the earth as opposed to out of the air. And the heat transfer is coming from the ground. So actually you have a renewable energy source. You can retrofit buildings to do that. And I know there's discussion today to look at that. And one of the options we would like to see on the table is literally the creation of a cooperative. When you create a cooperative, basically you're agreeing to work together with others in your own interests.
Well, it all sounds great, but we know how things turn out.
The great catastrophe of 2150 brought about a...
Wait, actually, we can't let them know about that. Time travel is well and good, but, you know, folks, for your own good and safety, you really don't want to know what happens in the 22nd century.
Please brace four-dimensional transport in 3, 2, 1.